Episode 5 of Restoration Beyond the Couch, presented by Restoration Counseling, features Jeff Weckel, an expert in psychological assessments. Alongside Dr. Lee Long, they will explore the pivotal role these assessments play in mental health care. Learn how they help tailor therapeutic approaches to individual needs, providing a foundation for effective treatment. Dive into the science and significance of psychological evaluations with us. Your path to mental wellness starts here.
So, we're talking about assessments today.
Uh-huh.
And for those who are unfamiliar with what psychological assessments are and what they typically involve, do you mind giving us a brief overview of what a typical psych assessment involves?
Yeah, I think to look at it from a 30,000 foot elevation, a psychological assessment is basically you're wanting to answer the question, why is something happening? Mm-hmm. What are the factors that are doing it? And so a good clinician is going to go and have a good background information. They're going to ask a lot of questions about the presenting issue that brings them in. And then based on that information, they're going to identify measurements that allow them to target what the referral behavior is.
So when you say identify measurements, you're saying that a good clinician is going to sit down with the patient coming in, looking for basically a look under the hood.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to listen to the engine and say, it's the carburetor. We need to look a little closer to that. Or that sounds like it might be the, and we've gotten to my limit of what I know about cars here. It's the muffler. It's the pistons. It's the something. And that's where they're going to measure the test, the measure.
Yeah, that's when we're going to find the measurement that actually looks at how the carburetor is running. There's so many different measurements out there. And that's why you want to go to someone who has experience with these measurements, is because they know all the measurements and the intricacies of them. And they could include a personality measurement. They could include a cognitive measurement. Typically, you don't want to just look at it from one angle. When you have a thorough assessment, you're going to have multiple measurements so that you're not just defining the tail end of the car. You want to look at every inch of the engine because something may be affecting the carburetor, and it may not be just the carburetor. You want to see a little bit more details of what could be influencing the carburetor.
Yeah, that makes good sense. So this is really, it's a hard science of looking at the personality, but it's also, there's a soft art to it of knowing listening for what is it, what is the presenting problem? Mm-hmm. I like to call it, what's the closest alligator to the boat?
Mm-hmm.
And looking at it from that perspective, and that informs how you begin a psychological assessment.
Yeah, because as the psychologist begins to look at the measurements, it says, oh, here's an alligator. Well, here's an alligator. And a good assessment is going to trace back to the den, to where it all began. So that, you know, using a car illustration, my son's restoring a 67 Camaro.
Yes, sir.
And one of the things that we're having a problem is the timing was off. So we began looking at the carburetor and doesn't need to be altered that way, but that seemed to be working fine. And then we started looking at the battery and was the battery holding a charge? And then we're looking at, it wasn't actually creating enough electrical junk to get the timing correct. And once we chased, as you said, the alligator all the way back to the problem, the existing, then we began to address that. And then all these other alligators, to use your metaphor, began to disappear because we got to the heart of it. And that's 30,000. We want to see what's creating the problem so that that informs treatment so that you can actually begin to address the root of the issue.
Yeah.
And not just try to band-aid or limp across life.
Right. Right. It's get to that core issue, which that's one of the questions that I wanted to ask you is what are the different types of assessments available that you've somewhat covered that, but I'd love to hear more about that and, mm-hmm. and how are they commonly used in the clinical setting, which is kind of what you're setting us up for here.
Yeah. So with an assessment, first there's the real soft aspect and that we call it the clinical interview. And sometimes these are really structured. Some clinicians use a semi-structured mm-hmm. approach, but this is just basically getting to know the background to the information of the individual and the presenting problem. Another measurement that's a little bit more concrete, more researched and better understood, and the validity, reliability of these measurements that I'm about to talk about may include personality. So one of the ones that is widely recognized as the gold standard for psychological measurements is the MMPI. Mm-hmm. It's gone through several editions of it. They're in the third edition. There's the PAI. There's the Milan. All these look at the intricacies of one's personality, which is different than sometimes you might have heard of the 16PF or the Taylor-Johnson or the Myers-Briggs. What's the popular one now with the
Enneagram?
Enneagram, yeah. Those don't have the breadth of scientific research that the ones that I mentioned formally. So those personality measurements begin to look at why does a person think and feel the way that they go about life and influencing? Because we refer to that personality measurement. It looks at the process of the mind. The other aspect of assessments that we're also looking at are the brain, the cognitive ability. And what we look at are things like the intelligence test, the Wechsler's, or achievement test. And especially if you're thinking learning disorders, achievement tests, see where they compare to the standard population as far as academics. Are they having a specific learning disorder like mathematics or also, by using those IQ tests with the achievement test, then we begin to take into consideration, is there a learning difference for the individual?
Right.
And there are special schools that can help out and give direction in helping out in that area. Other cognitive assessments are looking at neurological function, mm-hmm. such as processing speed, memory capabilities, and those measurements can be used for multiple reasons. A lot of psychologists will use those for stroke victims to see if they're improving in some of their symptoms and or head injuries, TBIs, things of that nature. So with all those put together, there's many different ways that we can evaluate to see how the brain's influencing personality or daily function, right. How daily functioning's impacting the brain. So getting in the weeds here, but
no, I love this because what I think about when you are describing all of this is there was a person that was being treated clinically mm-hmm. and he had had a TBI or a traumatic brain injury, and he didn't think about it as a traumatic brain injury because he didn't think about the fact that it had had an impact on him,
yeah.
But it made it difficult for him to learn and to process and to do specific functions. And we both know that therapy involves a lot of learning. It's not just externalizing your thoughts. There's a lot of learning that's associated with that. And this poor guy kept going through different therapist after different therapist because he quote unquote wasn't getting any better. Mm-hmm. And he would get frustrated with the process. Finally, his therapist was wise enough to see that, wait, you struggled to fill out the intake form. So what is your cognitive processing like? If you're struggling with simple instructions, it's not because there's something wrong with your character or you're a bad apple. His therapist sat with him and said, wait a second, let's process through this. He did some formal assessment mm-hmm. and they realized he had a traumatic brain injury that was impacting so many different things that in the clinical setting, he had no chance of learning anything.
Yeah.
So all this therapy, and I'm air quoting this for those of you who can't see me, is that all this therapy that he was trying to utilize was out of his reach.
Yeah, it was like Teflon.
That's right.
Just slipping. Just
slipping right off of yeah. him. Not because he was a bad guy or something was, you know, fundamentally flawed in him. Mm-hmm. He needed the help to overcome that so that he could learn. And when he got that help, life started to be different for him.
Yeah, the gear started.
That's it.
Yeah.
The timing.
Yeah, getting back to the engine to illustrate. Yeah. I love it. You know, and how freeing, you know, a lot of times when I'm giving the feedback to the assessment and people are, you mean I'm not crazy? Yeah. You know, this aspect, it reminds me, I don't know if you've seen that movie with Kevin Hart, Night School.
No.
I don't see a lot of movies, but I'm a sucker for Kevin Hart, I guess. But he illustrates a learning disorder. And when he's finding out the results of his learning disorder, he was like, you mean I have a process? What do you mean I have a processing disorder? What, you got to talk to me like I know what? And then it registered. Oh, I'm not processing. And then you see the relief in his character as he's acting and portraying. And I think that's often the case when you say, oh, this is the issue. Now I know I'm not crazy. There is a real reason. Now, how do we go about addressing it?
And in that way, these assessments really have the opportunity to guide the therapeutic process.
100%. 100%. I think a lot of times when we're going through the therapeutic and we don't have the insight, we're hunting for something when the lights are turned off.
Yeah.
And we're reaching in without glasses or, you know, whatever illustration you want to use here.
Right.
But, and it's like we turn on the spotlight of, okay, this is what we got to address. Let's go address it. And it may not necessarily mean that all of a sudden your processing gets better, but you develop the coping skills or the mechanisms or the grid to help you address the problem more accurately.
Which, and I love that you're articulating it that way, because when that occurs, then there is such a better understanding of the person that is sitting across from you, such that the effectiveness of what you're trying to utilize to treat is just far more effective.
And this is not only true in the therapeutic room, but I see this in the academic setting. I see this with parents going, this is why my child is having difficulty.
Yeah.
And then they learn a different technique that's more conducive to what the child needs,
right,
whether it be in academics or in the home.
Right. And in essence, you're giving them the ability to see their kid
accurately.
Right. Wow. Thinking about how we do assessment here at Restoration, is there a unique or distinctive way that assessments are conducted here?
Okay. I think what makes us unique is that we're very intentional. Now, there's other clinicians that are intentional and great clinicians out there, and I'm not don't want to come across as pompous that we've got it, but I think what we're, our intention is to really know the individual. I tell people that if I don't have a good understanding, then my interpretation of the measurements might be off. And if that's off, then the treatment recommendations are going to. So the clinical interview, I often tell people it's important for me to get the information, because in that time, it's like the lenses, and I'm able to use the lens of the clinical interpretation to interpret the data accurately.
Right.
So at Restoration, we want to look at the holistic aspects of a person, because it's not just the brain. It's not just the mind. It's not just the relationship. It's the community, the relationships that you have. And we want it to have a comprehensive and maybe even take into consideration, what's your diet like? Mm-hmm. Right? Because what we're discovering is that a majority of our serotonin, the neurotransmitter that's in charge of happiness and being alert and mood, sleep, all these type of, 80% of it, at least 80%, has been found to be produced in this gut. And so if you're eating this high refined food, ultra processed, then you're messing with your second brain, is what we're now calling it.
Right.
And so we want to take into consideration, do we need to look at improved sleep pattern, improve eating patterns, things of that nature. Research is showing you, if we assess someone to have ADHD and they're eating their carbs, sugars, and all that for breakfast, the Pop-Tart, well, that's not a good diet to start out with ADHD, because what we found is that eating a breakfast full of protein actually gets blood flow to the frontal lobe, so that a student is more out to be present when learning at school to help the ADHD symptoms.
Right. And you mentioned sleep, and I think, you know, I've done a deep dive recently on the whole concept of sleep and the effect on the brain and what it does for, gosh, how it regulates really everything.
Right.
And if you have somebody who shows up to school who hasn't slept well and hasn't slept well for days, what in the world are you going to get?
A ticking bomb?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And, or a lethargic.
That's right. But you're certainly not going to have a kid who's going to be able to learn. They're going to struggle. And then our struggle, and I think that this is something that you're pointing out, is that our struggle then is to not pathologize that.
Right.
To not, and what do I mean by pathologize? I mean, not make that something wrong with them. Mm-hmm. Instead, this is just a youngster or an oldster, wherever we are in life. Uh-huh. If we're not sleeping well, that is a critical impact, just like you're talking about with the diet. And so it is really holistic. And that's one of the things I love about the way that we approach things here, is it's really the attempt to look at the whole person.
Right. Not just the carburetor.
Right.
And to second that, maybe another thing that I would add to the uniqueness and we're not unique in the sense that, but a good psychologist isn't going to look at a person as a diagnosis.
Yes.
And that's one of the first things I want to make sure people know as I'm giving them the feedback is that there may be a diagnosis with this, but you are never, ever, ever defined by a diagnosis.
I hope you'll say that again.
Identity is much more. Our capabilities as psychologists to measure and accurately define somebody cannot be captured in a diagnosis.
Right.
Now, we can identify problems, and that's what a diagnosis is to look at something that's problematic.
Right.
But there's a lot of people who have problems that find ways to overcome them and do great things.
That's just exactly like you and your son fixing the timing on this amazing car, mm-hmm. this rebuild.
Yeah.
You fixing the timing on this does not define this car as though its timing is always off.
So let's just discard a 6.7 Camaro.
Right.
No, we've got to look at it for the beauty that it is.
That's right.
And that's how we want to see people.
That's right. That's right. Okay, so here's my next question for you is, how do you stay updated on the latest developments or best practices in the psychological assessments? What's your practice in staying updated on that good stuff?
Research, and then some research, and some more research. Mm-hmm. I'm staying in touch with the people who produce the measurements, and reading up on that, staying alert to the latest findings. Also, I want to find new ways to assess. Recently we brought into our practice a tool that actually uses tone of voice to measure the amount of stress a person has. Mm-hmm. We've also experimented with looking at how HRV can begin to show coherence within the body and how the body's responding to stress,
right.
And how we can improve the stress level of the body. And so looking at, once again, holistic, how do we assess the whole body? There's a lot of research going now into DNA.
Epidemiology.
Thank you very much. Tongue twister for me. Just constantly staying on the cutting edge of what is being published and researched and best evidence practice.
Yeah. And boy, it seems like our field is really exploring all of that much more heartily lately.
Yeah. To go along with that, as a psychologist and even psychiatry, a lot of our practice, we don't spend the time to take measurements.
Right.
Whereas you go to a bone specialist, they're going to measure bone density. Right. They're going to take your x-rays. They're going to get measurements to diagnose and treat the problem.
Right. I was always struck by Daniel Amen. I heard him say that many, many years ago. He said, psychiatry is the only practice of medicine that does not measure in some capacity the organ in which we're treating.
Right.
And I was blown away when I thought about that.
It's baffling.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let me ask you this.
Yes.
Do you believe, are there any self-assessment tools or practices that individuals, that people listening, could use at home to better understand their mental health at home?
Oh yeah. I mean, if you do a search on the internet, you're just going to find a plethora.
Yeah.
And these are good things to study and to research and to experiment with. They don't have the validity and the reliability that the measurements that we use as psychologists in this field, but it's always good to explore and examine yourself in many different facets. So I'm not keeping up to date with those things on the internet, but there's lots of different options out there to, and I strongly encourage that people to know thyself, right? And the more that you know about thyself, the more that you can respond effectively, or you increase the chances of responding right. effectively.
Right. Any thoughts about somebody using a tool that they find that as far as interpreting it would be like, do you have any thoughts for someone?
Interpretation is such a complex thing. Oh boy. The variabilities that are at play. There's a lot of times people will go to Dr. Google and come up with a conclusion that may be
right.
far out of line. And so if you're really concerned and you're finding yourself hitting the same wall over and over, I would highly encourage you to get a professional, someone who's well qualified to interpret the results so that it gives you a better understanding. There is a lot of danger with trying to psychologize yourself because, right. I mean, what got us there is the same line of thinking that we tend to use with Dr. Google. We can always find biases or confirm our fears. We can go through this life. There's tons of evidence of my fears out there.
Yes. And you know, you mentioned earlier part of the piece of what you bring into an assessment is looking at even the community.
Right.
And when I think about the idea of doing self-assessment, and those, again, you can't see Matt Mayer quoting, is that do we do this in the context of a trusted, safe, now again, I'm going to repeat that, a trusted and safe community.
Right.
Because part of assessment is getting external feedback. I mean, fair. Mm-hmm. And so having that external, having that community, and maybe something that we can encourage our listeners in is the idea of, yes, be very self-aware and have a very safe and trusted community with which you test that feedback.
Yeah. You know, you allude to the idea of relationship. Mm-hmm. And to have a relationship, that's always an assessment, because are you able to reciprocate in that relationship? And that reciprocation is so vitally important, because to go to a trusted friend and say, hey, did I miss this? There's vulnerability in that.
Right.
But in that vulnerability, when you're with safe people, there's opportunities to learn.
That's right. And so
to have that community, I think, would be very important. But that's not necessarily an assessment aspect,
right,
if we're looking at the formal. Matter of fact, you know, it's in those communities that people live. They're probably not needing assessment because they're being seen accurately and the reciprocation is provided. So I would say that if you find yourself having a pattern of difficulty and the community isn't seen to understand, go get a second opinion.
Yeah, that's a really great litmus test. Is that if something is more complex, then it probably is time to get a professional look.
Right.
It's just like when I'm hearing something off in my car or my truck, then I know, okay, I need to check these little things that I know to check. But then once that's beyond my ability to YouTube or Google, then I need to go get a second opinion. And I may need to take that to a mechanic. And not to try to make it that simplistic, but I think it really kind of could be that simple of it might be time to go get an evaluation. If there's a limp that we have or something that we have that keeps showing up over and over again, that it's time to, we don't quite know what to do with this. This is a little bit of a head scratcher.
Yeah. In practice, what I've heard many a times is a mom gives me a call and inquires about needing to get an assessment. And I said, well, tell me more about it. Well, me and the teacher have been talking, and the teacher doesn't know if it's ADHD or anxiety. And the teacher's been working and the student's still struggling to grasp concepts, that then it's time to go get a second opinion from a professional, and let's get the measurements. Let's look at this from an objective outsider, because sometimes the community it can be a head scratcher, and that's why we have these services.
That's right. Well, Jeff, thanks for being with us today, and thanks for helping take some of the mystery away of what these psychological assessments are, and it's been fun.
You bet. I appreciate being here.
If you found value in our discussion and wish to uncover more about the fascinating world of mental wellness, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Stay tuned for our upcoming episodes, where Dr. Long will continue to delve into empowering therapies and strategies for mental wellness. Your journey to understanding and embracing mental health is just beginning, and we're excited to have you with us every step of the way. Until next time, keep exploring, keep growing, and remember to celebrate restored freedom as you uncover it.